All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Jesse Felder. Boy, oh boy, there was a lot of talk about recession and trying to make sense of some of the data we're seeing, especially in terms of market moves. We're going to carry that conversation over a little bit now as we are chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. Now, as I mentioned, recession was the focus of the last segment, and it ties in nicely to an email that was sent out to the subscribers of Merk Research. It was the business cycle chart book where Axel and his team were outlining a number of different data points, a lot within the U.S., but also some outside the U.S., looking at Europe and Asia. Now, Axel, when it comes to U.S. economic data, what are some of the key focuses that you have? What do you think is some of the more important information that we are going to be getting throughout this year to help investors gauge if we really are going down this road of a devastating recession?
Yes, great to be with you. And I guess that the first thing we should say, why do we care about the economy? And aside from us potentially losing a job, it is that the stock market risk assets tend to do much better during economic expansions, during recessions. That said, there have been recessions, several where the downturn hasn't been so severe. So not everything is an 08 recession or a deep stock market collapse or 2000. But that's why we look at it. And in fact, one of the things your previous guests have talked about, the inversion of the yield curve a few months ago, nobody had heard of it, I suppose, other than the economists. But it's we look at that. But you might even want to be more concerned about when things become more normal again, because that is when the Fed starts to panic and starts lowering interest rates. And so the initial inversion when the short-term rates are higher than the long-term rates is just the canary in the coal mine, so to speak. What you want to be really concerned about is when then the Fed actually takes the action the other way around and starts easing, because that means they are, again, then behind the curve. Right. First, they say, oh, there's no problem. And then they said, oops, there's a problem. They slam on the brakes and then they go back again. And indeed, currently, the market is pricing in that the Fed will peak out sometime in the probably the summer next year. Who knows whether that's going to be the case or not. But if you listen at the most recent Fed minutes, suddenly they're all over them. Saying, oh, 50 basis points, and yes, we have to shrink the balance sheet dramatically. And by the way, we don't like inflation after all. And so it's when this catching up happens, as we have right now, that you'll have to start thinking in more in earnest of, well, maybe the brakes are going to be slammed now after all, and maybe we should be looking at the next thing already. So the Fed is so far behind the curve that it may be ahead of the curve, thinking of the next cycle already.
That is interesting, Axel, because the markets are forward-looking, but it's interesting. We just got the first rate hike in, and they're supposed to have a series of rate hikes, but most of the discussions we've been having is, at what point do they stop and reverse course? And there's already people betting on when the Fed will start cutting rates again. So that is very forward-looking, but to your point about the recent Fed minutes, they are getting more aggressive. They are going to start considering these 50 basis point hikes, but they're still really far behind the curve, and we're still in a very negative real rate environment. So do you think that the market will really react the way it has in the past and have a big tantrum, kind of like a taper tantrum? Or is most of this already priced into where the markets are, having had a rough first quarter to kick off 2022?
Yes. Next question. So it's I mean, who knows, right? Interest rates, yield, real interest rates, if you look at 10-year real yields, which is the inflation-protected securities, for example, the yield on those has moved up to about, as we're talking anyway, which is a few days before you broadcast this, at about minus 27 basis points. And it was as low as minus 1%, the real yields, just a few weeks ago. So rates have gone up dramatically in some ways, but they're still negative, right? So we still have financial repression. And ultimately, yes, you can argue everything is priced in, but at the same time, we see things like mortgage rates move up dramatically. And one, just anecdotally, right, some of these mortgage brokers have had several rounds of layoffs. Layoffs at mortgage brokers is a leading indicator to the housing market. And ultimately, the Federal Reserve cannot afford for housing prices to go down. Now, they don't want them to go up in a straight line, but that fine-tuning is really the real problem with inflation is that the fine-tuning is all the more difficult. Right? I have no doubt that the Federal Reserve doesn't like inflation, but what are they going to do about it? They drag their heels forever, and now they suddenly want to slam on the brakes. And I've said before, the biggest problem with high inflation is that policy and with that markets will be more volatile because you're going to have these knee-jerk reactions. And that is ultimately not good for assets in the markets. It's not good for employment. It's not good for confidence in the Fed to the extent there's confidence left. And then, by the way, on that note, we joke about there's no being no confidence in the Fed. If you look at what's priced in long-term in the market, those things are reasonably stable. And that means the market as a whole has confidence in the Fed. So you or I may not think the Fed is going to do the right thing tomorrow, but the market hasn't lost confidence yet.
That is true. And the Fed still does carry a very heavy hand for these markets. But Axel, as much as we look at economic data, it has changed so drastically prior to the COVID crash. 2020 was a very noteworthy year because we did have that immediate crash in an environment where we were stuck in slow growth, low inflation for 5-10 years practically. And then COVID with the maybe very quick recession or at least market crash that we had almost completely changed all this data starting last year when we had these rollover comparatives that quite frankly, the world was shut down and then the world was opening up. How do you balance out this, what seems like different environment that we have now post-COVID because of the major swings in data that we're seeing?
Well, one of the things I'd like to add to that, for the longest period, everything was dollar-centric. The dollar would go up or down versus other currencies. Well, in recent weeks, or especially since the escalation in Ukraine, currencies are all over the place. Some currencies up versus the dollar, some are down. And part of that is because there's a crisis in Europe that affects Europe more. Part of it is because we suddenly have a divergence in what central banks are doing. Right? The Australia just said a few days ago that they're not going to be patient anymore. And similarly, so some countries are digging in and saying, oh, no, we don't need to do anything, whereas other countries are storming ahead. And from an investor's point of view, in many ways, that's healthy because you have a greater dispersion of risk. You can allocate capital based on your analysis rather than just following where the central banks are going to steer their bazooka towards. And so in the medium term, that's healthy. Now, of course, it comes from a background where all asset prices are distorted. And so, yes, that means we'll have some hiccups in the markets. And we've seen, of course, some dislocations. I'm sure you've talked about the copper snafu that has happened where the London Metal Exchange just canceled a bunch of trades. That sort of stuff is symptomatic when central banks are taking a step back and suddenly you have to find real market prices. And I mean, Warren Buffett says you find out who swims naked when the tide comes back out. And the quote unquote good news is we haven't seen a blow up, so to speak, that's affecting quote unquote everybody. But you have these mini crises around. And as long as they're mini crises, it's a healthy process towards, I don't want to use the term normalization because I don't think what's coming up is normal, but it's healthy that the market is able to express itself again.
Yeah, that's a good point, Axel. I don't know that we're going to have anything that's resulting in normal, maybe a new normal, but it is nice to see different central banks around the world taking different policies, a little variety out there. But you brought up what happened in the nickel space with the limit up and then the LME reversing those contracts. We really have seen across the board in the commodity complex, you know, the oil and nat gas space racing higher. We've seen the base metals, whether it's zinc, lead, aluminum, iron. We've seen gold have a pretty good run. Silver, not as much, but we've seen the agricultural products, fertilizers, really the whole commodity sector. Many people are pointing to this as just the supply chain issues. Some have pointed to the Ukraine issue, but there's a lot of people that have been mentioning this was on the horizon for a while due to inflation, and we've seen inflation numbers tick up. How much of this recent commodity rise do you think is sticky because of the price actions as a result of inflation and increasing the money supply? And how much of it do you think is more transitory?
Well, volatility, I guess, is the name of the game. And first of all, I discourage anybody from trading any of these things. You really got to know what you're doing if you touch these commodities, especially, I mean, obviously the ones with that you'd use derivatives to trade them in. Clearly, Ukraine being offline, so to speak, affects agricultural commodities. Fertilizers affected with Russia being sanctioned and all that, right? And so we have supply chain issues, lots of stuff happening on the oil side. Part of it is the economy opening up. So all these factors are contributing factors. Some of it will be cyclical, right? And commodity prices are cyclical in the long run. I am quite concerned about stagflation. Those headlines keep popping up more in Europe than in the US at this stage. But yeah, if the Fed slams on the brakes and we have continued to have high commodity prices, to me, that has some resemblance of the 1970s, right? People were laughing about that just a few months ago. And now people are saying, well, maybe there's something to it. Ultimately, there's the cure to high prices, maybe high prices, right? When fuel prices are high enough, we'll drive less. But fear not, right? In California, I don't know whether they've passed it, but they want to send checks to people to afford the gasoline. Yeah, send more money so that they can consume more. Now, you need to have the high prices, obviously, to bring supply and demand back into balance. And policymakers will say these particular commodities are crucial and therefore will interfere with the market. And so I think we'll see a lot more disruption in these spaces as governments think that they know better than the market as to how these commodities should be allocated.
What are you worried about in terms of government stepping in? Because sometimes we do hear the fact that, oh, if governments come in and say, make this a critical metal or try to help out the consumer, then it can play havoc in these different commodities. What do you think is most at risk? What could governments even do here, Axel?
Let me first maybe tell you the one that I think is less at risk than many in your audience believe, and which is gold. Many people believe the government is going to go out and confiscate your gold. A lot of the folks that I know in government don't understand gold and it's not on the horizon, right? They think about oil. They think about whatever the critical materials are to build a battery-driven economy, that sort of thing, right? And so there will be a lot of talk about many of these things, and we've seen the initiative that, oh, businesses must invest in fracking. Well, at the same time, they don't ease the regulations. So a lot of that is noise because politicians say these things without really understanding them, and then everybody's going to cover it. And if you look a little bit deeper, not much is really changing, right? And it depends on the commodity. Agricultural commodities, you can ramp up quicker. Fracking, by the way, Europe could invest in fracking. You can generate gas in Europe. And by the way, it's not worse for the environment. It's probably better for the environment if you frack it in Germany than if you were to do it in somewhere in Russia. But I think we'll be very confused with all the headlines coming out. And yes, once in a while, some states, maybe even the federal government, is going to impose some rule that's going to be very disruptive. And it's to appease the base. But it's anything they'll do in any of these spaces is probably going to be not particularly helpful. But what I'm most concerned about, I'm not really too concerned about it. I think I've been hardened by so many years of capital misallocation that if there were some new price controls or other things come out, I don't think I'll be shocked.
Well, actually, you brought up gold there and said you don't think the government is going to seize it. So that's good news for anybody holding physical. But you also had talked about currencies earlier in the discussion. And when we're looking at the dollar or we're looking at the dollar index, it's really some fiat currencies in relation to each other that are all getting eroded over time due to inflation. And if you look at gold priced in those currencies, it's gone up on almost any currency on the planet, near all-time highs or at all-time highs. Do you think that's sustainable? And do you think we'll continue to see that trend in gold relative to global currencies? Or do you think we're at an inflection point here where it's just gotten a little bit ahead of itself due to the last couple of years of kind of financial chaos in the markets?
Sure. How many hours do I have to answer the question? So first of all, I think the recent inflationary trend and what I foresee is going to create volatility in the price of gold. Because when the market thinks that the Fed is really earnest in getting rid of inflation, yes, there can be a headwind to the price of gold. But we also discussed that this is going to crash the economy and then they have to revert. And so depending on the mood of the day, that's going to affect the price of gold. And net, I do believe the price of gold is going to be higher at the end of the day. When it comes to other currencies, indicated earlier, Europe, of course, is particularly affected by what's happening in Ukraine. Their energy use as percent of GDP has skyrocketed, in part because they're so dependent on Russian gas, and there's a lot of distortions there. Yes, over time, all these fiat currencies may well lose versus the price of gold. But at the same time, as countries like the commodity producing ones in particular are reflating their economy more successfully and the commodities are on high demand, and these central banks are getting rid of their COVID policies, I do think that there are some opportunities there for quite significant outperformance versus the dollar. I'm still in the camp, and I put my neck out in the spring of 2019, that we've kind of had a secular turning point. The dollar had been increasing for several years, that it would, in this economic cycle, go down. The jury is still out whether that will happen, because obviously in part because of the invasion of Ukraine and the dollar index at least being very euro heavy, we've kind of been more and more flattish on that. But we are still overall in a theme where I think that reflation is going to take place when Asia opens up and whatnot. And all of that is a bit of a dollar short. So it really depends on the Fed is going to do, and this can play out in many different ways.
Since we're talking about the Fed, we did have Fed minutes released on Wednesday. Axel, do you see anything new in these Fed minutes outside of, again, the expectations of maybe some more rate hikes, maybe some even 50 basis point rate hikes into next year?
Well, what's new is that apparently the current Fed is announcing the minutes for policy announcements. They used to be massage minutes that go through all the desks and everybody is saying, oh, let's iron this out a little bit, not surprise anybody. But this time around, they announced that they'll probably want to wind down the balance sheet by about $95 billion a month. And on top of that, that quote-unquote many on the FOMC wanted a 50 basis point rate hike. You and I listened to Powell speak, but I don't think that there was any talk about many on the FOMC wanting a 50 basis point rate hike. They were all quiet, right? And it seems like even the doves wanted that. So maybe they changed their mind afterwards and now put it into minutes. But these minutes are becoming more important because Powell doesn't want to say anything during the press conference to not upset the markets. And then afterwards, they let out all these pieces of information that eventually accumulate in the minutes. So it's a new process. And I don't know, I guess it's refreshing that we get some new information, but it's all a little, seems a bit haphazard and immature is how they release that information, and ultimately that again creates volatility in the market.
Yeah, and there's always the parsing of the Fed minutes and every word and whether the algorithms are keyed off those words, and people often see knee-jerk reaction in the markets right after these minutes come out. But I'd like to focus it back on one other market mover besides the central banks, and that's the consumer. Axel, a lot of consumers are more strapped now than they have been, especially in the U.S., but I think globally their inflation in food cost, inflation and fuel cost hits them and everything they buy and everything they ship. And so we're seeing reports out that consumer discretionary income is going down. People are pulling off their savings. They're even dipping and using credit cards. Do you think we're going to see further stagflationary forces, as you mentioned earlier, just a slowing of growth because the consumer is tapped out at this point in the cycle?
Yeah, so you, first reference to kind of global consumer, I do think there will be famine in the world. Many of the agricultural exports are not happening or have skyrocketed in price. That usually doesn't make for happy families. That means that political stability in many other parts of the world is probably going to be on the decline in the months and years to come. So that's just a global context. And then domestically, you mentioned they might even use credit cards. Well, that used to be the default, right? Then during COVID, the government wrote all these checks and people had money to buy meme stocks and whatnot. Now, of course, the more vulnerable folks that actually have a long commute, and that happens in many communities because they can't afford to live where they work. You and I, we can work from home, right? We don't like the higher gas prices, but it's not the end of the world for us. And so, yes, that will, on the one hand, get people upset, and that will probably be shown when it comes to voting this November. And yes, they have started some families have made choices, right? Food on the table or fuel for the truck, right? So that you can drive to work. That said, defaults and so forth are still very, very low, right? So the strain that you see in the numbers that we in the indices get published are still rather benign. And so, and now those are the ones that the Fed is looking at, which also means that the Fed is not going to be deterred from the anecdotal evidence that we see so far. They want to see their numbers look bad, and when they look bad, things are going to be really bad for the consumer. And yes, the word stagflation comes up again. I think that word will come up more in months to come as the economy is slowing down.
It all makes a roundabout turn back to stagflation right now, because there are a lot of people starting to talk more about stagflation, and this time I believe with a lot more data behind them as well, including what the markets are doing. So Axel, it's always great chatting with you. Thank you very much for your time. If anyone wants to follow along with Axel and what Merck Investments is doing, you can follow Axel on Twitter, which I will post his handle in the weekend show posting, as well as a link to the Merck Investments website. Axel, thank you again for your time. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend, and I hope this weekend show wasn't too depressing in the sense that, yes, there are some recession fears out there, but we'll see how everything is managed this year, especially from central banks, because, well, we just don't know what's going to happen, and volatility is clearly here to stay for 2022. Everyone, have a great rest of your weekend. Axel, thank you again for your time.
Take care.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.